Oneida County legislator, they had a vote on Cuomo's land deal with Ray Halberger. And so what happened at that time, what information was available to legislators to make their decision on this vote?
Let me say one thing. The key thing you said there is you said the land deal, which is actually a mischaracterization of what this was. That was what Cuomo's press release said.
Okay, thank you.
And what this really was, this is really a gambling agreement, because the land deal, so-called settlement of the land deal, we'd already won the land claim. The citizens of Oneida County who were sued, 20,000 of them, met several, you know, decades ago. The land claim was finally resolved and dismissed 2 or 3 years ago by the U.S. Supreme Court. So there really wasn't a land deal. What he did is went back and took the land deal and resurrected it and gave them the land, a settlement, basically no taxes. And that's what actually happened. And then said, now going forward, you don't have to pay taxes. You're just going to pay a percentage on certain gambling proceeds.
Because this was a deal that he was making that had to do with gambling and the...
Right, with the casinos.
Was a new incentive that he was giving.
Right, to give them the land, and to give them basically the land and the land claim, and, you know, the settlement from the land claim, and to give them what they call land into trust, which is currently litigation pending in the federal courts now, is whether or not they can even get land into trust, which we argue they can, and the courts have so far come down on the side of you can't, especially in a state like New York, which is an original colony. Mm-hmm. So an original colony has its own separate sovereignty. That's one of the reasons New York State, actually in the founding of the federal government back in the 1700s, why New York State actually didn't sign on to accept the Constitution. They were like the 11th state because they wanted to preserve their sovereignty. And Chad can talk to you a lot about the land claims because he's a land title expert. He can tell you about the cloud on title that we've had for all these years. That's now going to be actually put back if this deal actually comes to fruition.
Can I just go back
to
the court case that was won 2 or 3 years ago in the Supreme Court? Was that the highest...
U.S. Supreme Court, yeah.
So that's the highest court to rule on it. After that, then there's no place else to appeal it.
Right. That's right. If I could summarize, Pete, on that end, what happened in August 9th of 2010... The Second Circuit looked at Judge Kahn's decision of the District Court in Albany. And the Second Circuit in New York City, which is a panel of judges, basically said, Judge Kahn is correct. The land claim is over. But in addition, the Second Circuit said there's no money due whatsoever as well. So what happened thereafter is the Oneidas appealed that decision of the Second Circuit to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And on October 17, 2011... The U.S. Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., denied certiorari, which basically means that they looked at the case and ruled that the lower courts, in this case the Second Circuit, had it right. And so what you had as a matter of law, the land claim was dead, fini, complete. And what happened next is the governor and our county executive misrepresented to the people in Oneida County and throughout New York State, Madison County as well, that the land claim was not dead. They tried to say it was something.
This was a settlement. The press release from the governor said, decades-long land claim finally settled. The land claim was long since already lost by the Oneida Indian Nation in court, as was the Cayuga Nation, and most recently you'll see the Onondaga Nation's land claim was just thrown out.
So they reignited this whole thing. And
actually they used this phony terminology, the settlement of the land claim, when there was no settlement of the land claim, and it's really a casino deal, and that's, I think, the point we want to get at.
Another striking point is right. You want to go right up to the vote, but remember this, before we vote on something, it should be deliberately discussed. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. They had discussions, and this agreement that Peter Carman put together for the United Indian Nation was about 100 pages. We weren't at the table for that. This was done behind closed doors, totally. The only people that were privy to this, aside from Peter Carman and the other attorneys for the United Nation, were the governor and evidently Anthony Pacenti, our county executive. Why do I say that? Because on May 16th, rather on April 16th, I was given a call by Rowan DeCito's assistant, Debbie, who called me on the 15th of that month. Here at 9:30 at night, the governor's going to make a major announcement. And they wanted us to come down to Albany if we wanted to be briefed before the press conference. They threw this at us. We had no input on this whatsoever. And so at the press conference, actually before...
I think it was May, wasn't that?
The vote was...
the vote was in May. When was the press conference?
For the assembly, it was in May. April 28th, I think, was our vote.
It was May and April. Is that when it was?
April 28th was our vote. So it was April 16th that we convened with the governor. And at a private meeting with the county legislature, that's Oneida County's legislature, the governor said such things as, money is money, it doesn't matter what pocket you put it in. When I questioned the governor about Article 2, Section 10 of state law, which says that the governor is obligated to protect and defend New York State sovereignty and jurisdiction under any attack or pretense of attack, he didn't know what to say.
So and he's basically giving up our sovereignty by changing this to federal land.
That's correct. And that's exactly what this does. It will create a huge chunk of New York State, Central New York, and Madison and Oneida counties that will be federal trust lands, which, by the way, once it becomes federal trust land, the federal government takes control, and you cannot reverse it in this respect, and they can continue to add to that land. In other words, this agreement tries to cap it at 8,000 acres, but if the federal government has control, their rules say they can continue to add. One of the most shocking things, among others, aside from the money that's given up here, is that the fact that they could hydrofrack these lands outside the DEC regulatory framework. So it seems like an egregious taking, in as much as there was no National Environmental Policy Act treatment of this land, or no SEQR, no State Quality Environmental Quality Review Act action. And so this runs contrary to all kinds of due notices. I mean, I do land title insurance. Just to take a house, there's all kinds of due process procedures to protect people's rights. Now here you're taking out a huge chunk of state land. And Claudia can pile on this because she's an attorney. She knows this stuff. But the idea is federal trust land. It's unheard of. And one last thing I'll say is that there was a Hawaii case after the Sherrill case. And we could talk about the Sherrill case too. But in 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Hawaii that once federal territory goes into state jurisdiction, as happened in Hawaii, it cannot roll back into federal jurisdiction. So New York State had its borders intact in 1788, 1 year before the U.S. Constitution was ratified. That goes back to what Claudia was saying. We were an original colony. In the U.S. Constitution, there's no federal power on land. It's all with the state. What the federal government has is power with commerce, moving goods and services above the soil. But the soil itself, New York State sovereign jurisdiction, was for New York State to control only, and not to have this federal power come in and tear up our communities.
Right, and what he's actually, the vote in Oneida County was May 28th. It was May 28th, and then we voted at the end of June in the assembly.
Okay, May.
So it was May
28th.
Okay. So just want to clarify that.
Thanks, Claudia. I appreciate that.
Yeah, the interesting thing from the, you know, people always think, you know, that the federal government was started and then created the states. The states actually created the federal government. It's always the reverse of what people think. And really, what's so significant about this particular case, in a way, we're losing our ability to govern this property. And the state law even has Article 2, Section 10 of state law actually states that the governor must defend the sovereignty of New York and must employ counsel to protect us. And what's interesting is in this process, the governor has said, well, we're just going to take the counsel that our taxpayers have spent millions of dollars defending and winning lawsuits on behalf of the citizens to, by the way, prop up, which is really a casino empire. It's really not about the United Indian Nation. It's not about traditional Indian values. And we'll get into that. I actually represent a full-blooded Oneida Indian who is about to be forced off his land if this deal was to go through. So really, that's what this is about. It's really not about, you know, the Oneidas and their rights and their claims. It's really about these people, casino interests, Washington interests, corrupt politicians, everybody getting their piece of the pie to come in and prop up a person like Ray Halberter in order to make money. It's really what it's about.
To summarize, it would be about power brokers seeing dollar signs.
Yes, it really is. And you know, and if you drive down Marble Hill Road or go see who any of the true Oneidas or anyone who objects to Ray Halberter's power, that person is doesn't receive any money from the Oneida Indian casinos, is considered a dissident, which I find astounding. The term dissident was actually quoted me by a former editor of the Utica, or the Utica Observer-Dispatch, said, "Oh, well, we've done stories on dissidents before." I said, "That just reminds me of the Soviet Union. That's what we called the people that were against the regime, were the dissidents." So it's incredible that this is actually happening here, and that we have our governor and people, corrupt politicians, sort of propping up this situation, and to the at the expense of traditional Native American values and some of the Native Americans who are legitimate residents of certain land in Oneida County are now going to be thrown off their land. It's outrageous, really, that we're allowing this to happen.
Is this a good point to go into the history of how Ray Helberger got into power?
Sure, that would be, yeah, we could talk about that. It's interesting because a lot of people don't really know what happened, and that they don't realize that how this all started was, you know, Ray Helberger, and this has been the subject, actually, of a lot of national media. He's been making a big deal about the Washington Redskins and their name, and that it was offensive to Native Americans. And I don't disagree with him, actually, on that. I do find it, I don't know how you feel, Chad. I mean, I know it's just a football team. I mean, there are other names that I could find offensive too in sports. But I look at it as he's putting himself into the national conversation. So the question is, who are you and who are you to make this claim? Now, one of the points that I raised, and as obviously in full disclosure, I represent Melvin Phillips. He's an Oneida Indian who lives in Vernon, New York. But one of the things, we've done a lot of research on this issue, and interestingly enough, we found a document from the National Archives. If anyone wants to go look it up, I don't know if it'll still be there soon, but I have a copy anyway. Roll 290, frame number 17 from the National Archives. It's a micro copy of Indian census rolls back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and basically what it says is that the, this is the heading is Census of Indians Residing Upon the Oneida Reservation Who Do Not Belong to the Six Nations. And, the names are among them Lucy Carpenter and then Christine Carpenter, who's Lucy's daughter, who's the mother of Mary Cornelius Winder, Delia Cornelius Waterman. And then Mary Winder had several daughters, one of whom was Gloria Helberger, Ray Helberger's mother. So that means his ancestry is not of the Six Nations. And as people know, anyone who knows New York State history, he's not. The Six Nations are the great historic tribes of New York that ran across the swath of central New York, the Senecas, Cayugas, Onondagas, Oneidas, Mohawk. And he's considered not part of the Six Nations. So how is he running one of the Six Nations historic tribes? And so the question is, how did he get there? Well, it's interesting because at one point he was sort of hanging around at the Onondaga Reservation because there was not really much of an Oneida Reservation left. And then he kind of got kicked out of there and he was milling around, and the Oneidas didn't really have an organized situation because, truthfully, a lot of the Oneidas were treated like second-class citizens. They had no special status, and a lot of their lands were gone because many of them had been forced out by federal policy, not state policy, by the way, federal policy, because the state actually contracted and did the treaties with the Oneidas and with all the nations, and they paid them. And people say, well, we stole their land. Well, technically, we really didn't steal their land. We actually paid for the land. And we
what
got,
year was that?
In 1788 was when the first treaty was. But so the treaty sort of evolved, and one of the themes of the treaties is as long as you stay on your land and on the land that's been designated for you, you know, to hunt and fish on for your lifetime, you can stay there. And there was a treaty in 1842 that allowed a certain tract of land of the Marble Hill Oneidas, the Orchard Party, of which my client Melvin Phillips is one of them, in Oneida.
A full-blooded Oneida Indian.
He lives there, and he still resides on that particular designated land, and he's never left the land, so you could say he's truly complied with the treaties. Interestingly enough, Helberger, and it's still listed as treaty land under state law, and he actually purchased with fee simple, meaning just like buying a house. He bought part of the land just because he was so worried they're going to take the land away from him and not recognize his Indian rights. So, interestingly enough, part of the deal with Cuomo seeks to take this parcel, which is farmland. It's not anywhere connected to the United Indian Nation enterprises or the casino. So why would he want to take that land, which we find interesting? So That raises that question, but we'll go back to, so how did Halberter get into power?
Sorry, but just treaty land there, now is that considered a reservation for the Oneidas?
It's considered a reservation for the, it was set aside for the Orchard Party in 1842.
But that would be considered a reservation land? I'm just trying to...
Yes, it is. It would be considered New York State reservation land, which is to be distinguished from federal reservation land.
Okay, and do they both get governed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs in some way?
Technically, we argue that they don't. I mean,
The oversight in New York State has always been state jurisdiction. And this was argued and pointed out by Ira Sachs before the U.S. Supreme Court in the Sherrill case, an oral argument, January 11, 2005. And I say that because the question came out west on a federal reservation, who goes in if there's a problem on the reservation? And it was always the FBI. And the Supreme Court was told in New York, if there's a problem on the reservation, who goes in? And it's always been the state police. That was sort of the litmus, but the Federal Trade and Intercourse Act itself migrated west as the federal territory migrated west. And in the Federal Trade and Intercourse Act of 1790, there is an exclusion for the individual states. So what Ray Halberter conveniently did in the 70s when he got this land claim, land grab kicked off, is he took Western Indian law, imputed it into the east. And our lawyers failed to call him on that. And then the cat got out of the bag, the horse got out of the barn, and the genie got out of the bottle. And it's going to be awfully tough to take what their operations have been outside the scope of regulatory New York State law in so many respects. And the sad thing is we had all the tax laws on our side. And now the governor, and guys like Joe Griffo, by the way, who, when he ran for office, our state senator, and he now represents an area that doesn't include Kirkland anymore. But he said when he ran for a second term of the Senate that he would look forward to collecting the Indian sales tax. He said that the businesses owned by Native Americans do not collect tax and local sales taxes, although the state law says it should be paid. Joe Griffo said the law is the law. He says you can't ignore the law. And he went on to say, I don't know what there is to negotiate. I make this point, Pete, because... interestingly, 4 years later now, he has voted for this land grab where the Oneidas are going to be totally tax exempt. And what's it's going to cost
continue
us...
continue to be totally tax exempt.
Continue to be totally tax exempt.
Actually, they're not tax exempt. They just don't pay.
And simple math shows us real property taxes by the year 2033 going forward. Back taxes and forward-looking taxes is over $550 million. The sales tax...
you say
and
say back and forward. Well, how... looking how far forward?
Well, for to the year 2033. Right now, they owe Oneida County $195 million. That will be $550 million by the year 2033.
Okay.
But more egregious is sales tax, because, and we know at the county level, sales
this
tax...
this is just the county, by the way. That doesn't include the state and the sales. Go ahead.
Yeah, so when you add up the back taxes that weren't paid and the future taxes not to be paid... up to the year 2033, this deal allows the Oneidas to walk away with $1.4 billion in unpaid taxes.
And is that the Oneidas or the Oneida Nation Enterprise?
That would be the Oneida Nation Enterprise of the United Indian so-called nation. And that's something that maybe Claudia would want to cover because, quite frankly, they're not a true bona fide nation. They are U.S. citizens just like you and I. As per an
state
act of,
citizens.
State citizens, too. But as an act of Congress, 1924, the Citizenship Act of 1924, any Indian born in this country is a U.S. citizen. By the way, there's an individual sovereignty in the U.S. Constitution, a state sovereignty, and there's a federal sovereignty. There's no Indian sovereignty in the U.S. Constitution. My point is, when you create a situation like what this carves out and allows them to go into any business they want to and not pay taxes, they can literally annihilate any conventional business we have out there and annihilate our tax base at the same time. Why do I say that? Because every central New Yorker, after they pay all their bills in their household, only has X amount or a limited amount of plus money, discretionary money in their wallet to spend it, whether it be at the Stanley Theater, a restaurant, what have you. And if that money is being spent up there, it doesn't come back for roads, bridges, healthcare, and everything the government needs to do. That creates a house divided against itself, which Abe Lincoln said cannot stand. Therein lies a crux of many of the problems. I mean, all these things were thought to be great, but when you put jobs ahead of the Constitution, when you allow jobs to trump the rule of law.
When you say jobs, what do you mean? How many jobs have we lost for the sake of these 4 or 5,000 jobs that the
That's true.
That the Washington lobbyists, the corrupt politicians, and the Indian casino, or the, I should say the casino, Vegas casino interest benefit from?
Well, the public should know that 33 taxpaying gas stations were put out of business by 11 Savons. The Savon gas, for example, that tax, if you've paid it nice and easy, comes back for roads and bridges. When you fill up now in Clinton and Kirkland, you're probably having to pay twice for our local bridges because money in Oneida County is not coming back for roads and bridges in western Oneida County. So there is a huge financial cost that's under the radar right now. In fact, we have to make VBS school whole at the county level. And so there's a lot of additional money is in the tune of millions of dollars that we taxpayers are having to make up because they don't pay. And I think I morphed out of your subject matter there.
That's
I didn't
right.
mean
That's
to.
Right.
But the bottom line is feed a trust creates all kinds of scenarios, which even the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 2005 in Sherrill goes against what we call justifiable expectations.
Yeah.
With New York State sovereign jurisdiction, they ruled another equitable doctrine of the doctrine of impossibility. They said that this is not right. And so we have politicians that are allowing this to happen, and they're selling out basically Central New York taxpayers for someone who already has a ton of money and is going to allow him to aggrandize even more. And there's probably what? How many Oneidas? Maybe 1,000?
We're not even, we're probably 400 or so, and that's another. I don't even know how we could possibly ever. They haven't had 1,050 or 100 years, and at the rate they're going. You know,
but they pad the rolls.
Actuarial tables would let them put you at lesser amount. But I guess, I mean, the point you got to get back to is you were saying, how did Halberter end up in this position in the first place, and how did he get there? And look, before 1988, nobody cared about Indians, because what happened in 1988? We passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. So what it was a way to find a loophole to create a way around. Many states had anti-gambling laws, like New York. So what they created, we'll put it on Indian land or federal land that's on, you know, originally federal land that became what they call Indian country. And so by doing that, you can now open casinos, and they, you know, the people go in and rake in all kinds of money at the, and, you know, say, they're Indians, so you know, we can take the money. I mean, the one of the greatest examples of this farce is there's actually a casino that's out in California, and there's a woman that's 1/32nd Indian, and she's the only one in the tribe, and they give her like $1 million a year, but the casino people take the rest. And they say, well, this is an Indian casino. I mean, it's a farce what they're doing. And that's what Halberter comes into play. They found a spot where they could take advantage of the United Indians at the time, and they weren't the nation at the time. He created that. The Oneida Indians weren't organized. They were pretty much decimated in a lot of ways, with the exception of Melvin Phillips. A lot of them, they didn't really have, they had a longhouse, but there weren't that many people left. They were poor, living in trailers.
Did the Oneidas here go through the residential schools?
They were going to, they went to just, yeah, you mean our public schools?
No, I mean there were separate residential schools. I know some of them.
They might have went in the past, but not Melvin. I mean, his family went, they all went to, tip, you know, whatever our regular public school system. But what happened is, so they take the template from the federal territories and they say, hey, we got a guy in New York. We're going to go set one up in New York. So they set up this casino in New York, and they didn't realize what they got into here. By the way, we don't have federal territory, first problem, because of the nature of New York's history. And eventually that's all been eroded away through the courts, you know, when they sued for the land claim and all of their claims, you know, from their, they think they're free from taxes. Well, they're not, because this isn't federal territory. They thought that they could set up a casino. Well, technically not. The casino has been declared illegal in New York because it doesn't meet the requirements of the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. Lots of things occurred. So that's how you get this situation. So how did Halberter get there? He was put in place over the objection and over the vote of the Oneida people, and put there by Sherry Bollard, our former congressman, and Bill Clinton was the president, and Ada Deer, who was the Department of Interior secretary at the time in 1993, after a couple of them, and I don't have them in front of me, but I can get them, urgent letters from Congressman Sherwood Bollard, you know, begging and pushing and cajoling Ada Deer to put him in at least provisionally. And she finally did, even though the Oneida people didn't want him there. She put him in for conditional 6 months, and we've never looked back. And that was in late 1993 as the casino was opening, because they needed to have him in place. They hustled through a constitution and a bunch of other things that they needed to make themselves look legit to get the casino up and running. And that's... And there's
the NAFTA vote. You got to mention.
Well,
the
it's interesting because there's a story. Many people, like Bowler, was very coy about how he's going to vote on NAFTA at the time, and remember it was a big issue. And this is an article from the Rome Daily Sentinel. The title is "Bowler Remains Coy on Vote for Trade Treaty That Clinton Wants," and it's going through all his how he hasn't made his decision yet. But interestingly. Back when Bowler was keeping his decision on NAFTA on hold in November of 1993, he said that strategy could pay off in a number of ways, including, and this is them quoting Bowler, a defense finance accounting service at the realigned Griffiths, which was closing at the time, special consideration of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for small cities grants for cities affected by base alignments. A good case could be made, and I say it's in quotes, that timing of federal recognition of Ray Halberter as representative for the Oneida Nation just days before was related to his holding out on NAFTA, he said. It could not be determined what district between benefits Bowler might seek this time in exchange for his support. So a good case could be made that, you know, he said put Ray Halberter in place. And I'll vote yes on NAFTA.
And what role did
and all those things took place.
And what role did Mario Cuomo play in this? Do you know that?
Well, Mario Cuomo signed the so-called compact, which didn't require them to pay any taxes, and
he didn't settle the land claim.
Didn't settle land. Didn't do anything. It just gave them the right to open the casino, which we turned out was the compact was determined to be invalid through litigation. Just like the land claim, just like they have to pay their taxes. The Sherrill decision was a landmark decision. What the Sherrill case was in 2005 is, what it said is they couldn't go out and buy individual parcels of land on an open market. Like they couldn't buy your house and suddenly make that Indian territory. Can't be done. So what they're trying to do now is circumvent the Sherrill case and go toward the land into trust option and say we now want the federal government to take the land into trust. Which is basically circumventing Sherrill to accomplish exactly the same thing.
By the way, Justice...
Are we confusing you yet?
There's a lot of confusing... It's a very confusing issue, but one thing that I'm still confused about is federal trust the same as the original reservation land in New York State?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, the question about original reservation land is this is it.
Well, because the original wasn't federal.
Right, it was not. It was state land, and there isn't any federal reservation land. There's federal land, the 32 acres in Madison County, which they have recognized, but it's not federal territory. There's a difference. It can be recognized as land of the Oneida Indian Nation. By the way, my client, Melvin Phillips, has never set foot on that territory. He refuses to because he considers himself a separate band, and he's in Vernon, which is in Oneida County. But... That land is not federal territory. It is actually the subject of a partition action, and it's technically it doesn't have what they call there's a term of art known as Indian country, meaning it was originally federal land. It's complying with all the statutes. We don't have any of that in the state of New York. In fact, we don't have any of that in the Northeast. Indian country is a quasi sovereign situation. Halberter wants everyone to think that it's Indian country, but it's not.
Go
ahead.
One more question.
Yeah, ask me.
Is there any such thing as completely sovereign Indian land in this country? Instead of quasi, you said it's quasi.
Yeah, it's quasi. There's really not such a thing because technically under all federal statutes, anyone that's a Native American or Indian, and my client refers Indian, some people find that offensive, technically they're all what they call wards of the federal government. They're all paid, they're subject, they receive benefits from the federal government, and they call them that. There really isn't anything where you're completely sovereign, like a separate nation. I mean, remember Halberter was going down to the UN. He wanted to create himself as a separate country, which is a bunch of nonsense. But
because then the Lakotas were trying to grow industrial hemp, and then the DEA came in and said no.
Right.
So that's because they don't have not sovereign.
Yeah, they don't have any superiority over the federal government. They may have some quasi sovereignty over state areas because it's federal versus state.
Now, I heard that the Onondagas have their own passports.
Huh. They're not legit. They wouldn't do anything for them.
Okay.
They wouldn't be recognized, let's put it this way. They're not a separate country.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were about to say, Chad?
Yeah, there was a U.S. Supreme Court case in 1978, United States versus Johns, or John. The court explained that the only way that land ceded to the state, as was done in 1788, could have been made into federal Indian reservation lands was for United States to purchase that land. There's no design here to purchase this land, although you could argue that the Uniteds have purchased this land, but in the Sherrill case in 2005, they said they cannot unilaterally purchase the land and put it into trust. Now, what Justice Ginsburg did in her decision is she threw out dictum. Dictum is a, by the way, offhanded remark that has nothing to do with the pertinence of the case at hand. And her comment was, the only avenue or road for fee to trust under the federal rules was 25 U.S.C. 465. But 25 U.S.C. 465 is a federal rule for federal territory. It didn't apply to New York State. So the United Nations to say that the Supreme Court gave the United Nations, a roadmap for fee to trust, in New York State, I would say that roadmap is a dead end. It doesn't really afford that. And in addition, Ginsburg writes, the regulations implementing, let's suppose they could utilize 25 U.S.C. 465 and put lands into trust. Mm-hmm. She writes, the regulations implementing Section 465 are sensitive to the complex interjurisdictional concerns that arise when a tribe seeks to regain sovereign control over territory. She says, the Secretary of the Interior, Department of Interior, that is at the federal level in Washington, must consider, among other things, one, the impact upon the state and its political subdivisions resulting from the removal of the land from the tax rolls, and jurisdictional problems and potential conflicts of land use which may arise. And that's under 25 CFR section 151.10. So my point is, here you have an agreement where they not only avoided all these laws, had no due process, no public hearings, but in addition, they're going to take another 8,000 acres and yank it off and put it into trust under the agreement itself and not know where this land is going to be in terms of impacts on the community. That's very egregious. So it seems to me that this whole law or this agreement will be found to be unconstitutional. Why? Because the U.S. court system has judicial review over legislative acts. They can determine if an act of the legislature is outside the Constitution. And that landmark case was Marbury versus Madison in 1803. And that is exactly what we have going on here, is a usurping of constitutional rights. We have reverse discrimination. We have civil liberties and civil rights that are being violated. People sanctioned their homes are now being thrown into Indian country, because what they'll do now is they'll take the outermost, since this is all checkerboard the way he's purchased his land, they'll take an outermost circle and everything in there will be part of Indian country.
Okay, I have not heard yet how they deal with the checkerboarding. So they take the outermost pieces of it and fill in everything in between.
Correct. That's...
So, and one more question. You keep saying 8,000. I was under the impression it was a 35,000 acre deal.
25,000, but right now they
Madison County is included, gets it up to maybe 35.
Yeah, it's a 25,000 was the deal, I thought.
Well, Oneida County.
Right now, what's happened is
17,300 acres right now are owned by the United Indian Nation. They allow to put another 8,000 acres in Oneida County, which gets it up to 25. The additional land you're talking about is Madison County land.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, the big thing is, all this is just, sounds like a lot of legal jargon, but really what it's about is allowing them to be able to game and do gambling. And the governor, it's interesting because this deal goes, and they can gamble. And the reason they can gamble, whether that referendum that we're looking at the casino gaming referendum that's on the ballot for the voters this November, even if this doesn't pass, the governor put in the federal taking New York State land and creating federal territory all to protect them in the event that the gaming doesn't, so it goes anyway, so they can game on the federal lands, just like they can hydrofrack, they can do whatever they want on that federal lands. That's why he's created the federal lands for them. God knows what he's got planned for if they're going to do hydrofracking and what the governor's going to get.
It's finally coming together for him. So the reason that he's pushing for this to be federal land is because then once it's federal land, it can be
anything
all those
they want.
Federal rules can apply. It couldn't apply to New York State.
Right,
land.
And he, anything
exactly.
can be done on the land. Okay. So it doesn't matter if the casino gaming referendum passes in January or not. If it doesn't pass and this deal somehow survives, and I don't think it's going to survive with the federal court because, I mean, now he's got the attorneys who we've spent millions on turning the tables and now working against us, you know, working against the taxpayers, the opposite direction, trying to support putting federal trust land.
Let me emphasize that.
Yeah.
David Schraver and David Tennant, lawyers at Nixon and Peabody in Rochester, New York, who have spent years and their firm has made millions of dollars protecting New York State's sovereignty and jurisdiction, are now working to create Indian country in New York State. They are now working to help the United Indian Nation. They are now working against you and me and our New York State. They're unhinging New York State right now.
At the behest of the governor. The governor is bullying all these people. He's bullying them into silence, and he's bullying everybody into accepting this deal. And that's what. And that's when you started this conversation. How did it start in the legislature? They were bullying people to vote, very close votes. I wasn't at Madison County, but it was described to me as several people were crying as they took a yes vote to support this because they knew it was against what they've stood for. But they were told and threatened that if you don't do this, I'm pulling out anyway. We're not going to give you any money. This is, you know, people were threatened into doing this. I think that is one of the most horrendous parts about the way that this all went down.
Nothing was tabled
in a month's time, by the way, from kind of May till June. It was done.
Nothing was tabled for further discussion. They railroaded it through over a holiday weekend. No public hearings. Let me give you one little side light of this land agreement. We have a map here that was in our Bureau of Indian Affairs map. And what it shows is the land that they want to create as Indian country. And Fish Creek, it shows here, reservation continues north. Well, in having the reservation continue up Fish Creek, mm-hmm. that is the city of Rome's water supply. Our county executive's county legal counsel is Attorney Greg Amoroso. Greg Amoroso was hand-in-hand with Mr. Presenti making this deal happen. Yet in the year, in March of 1999, here's a Rome Sentinel article in which Greg Amoroso, as corporation counsel for the city of Rome, was very concerned about Fish Creek being swallowed up by the United Indian Nation. Why? Because it's the city of Rome's water supply. So what you have here is bullying by the governor and our county executive and the very people that should be protecting and defending us, our lawyers, whether it be state counsel, as in Nixon Peabody, or our local county executive's attorney, who also should be representing the county legislature. He basically didn't say a blessed thing to defend and put an objective view on this thing.
So can the governor be sued for using the attorneys against the people's interests?
When they railroaded it through, Pete, what they have now is... they had the sanction of they're hiding under the sanction of the county legislature when, in fact, in my opinion, it was not a bona fide good vote with everything being understood in terms of what they were voting on. And certainly the public was whitewashed on this. So that they're now, when they got the vote 16-13, and there was some arm twisting going on. Mm-hmm. Rowan DeStito's never been in our caucus in 6 years while I've been a legislator. She was emailing that morning and then was in our caucus, and I actually threw Rowan DeStito out of our Democratic caucus. I said, Rowan, what are you doing advocating for Indian country? I said, you work for the people of the state of New York. She walked out of our caucus. She got down to the water fountain. She turned back to me and said, Chad, you keep your words to yourself. Well, I'm sorry, but the DeStito family is in deep with this stuff, and shame on her with her conflict of interest when she works for the governor and she's head of General Services, and her family is making money on this casino liquor sales, and the estimated sales might be about $3 million a year in terms of just sales tax coming off the liquor. So the idea that she didn't have a vested interest, she's been cozy with Ray Halber for years, as has Mr. Presenti. I have yet to be invited into our county executive office and said, by our county executive, Anthony Pacenti, Chad, what do you think about this land deal? He refuses, and yet he's with Mr. Halbert all the time, rubbing elbows. What do you need, Ray? You're so good. And he said at the State of the County address this past spring, he said, the county executive said, I don't want to be reading the tea leaves of the U.S. Supreme Court. Don't you think the Supreme Court, if they heard that, they'd fly off the handle? Because what's happening is we have an unbelievable amount of mischief going on here. You don't have radioisotope on money, but bottom line is there's something going on that people aren't seeing because their books are closed. You can't put the sunshine on what they do, and yet they have millions and millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars running through their fingers every year. Their gross profits from someone who worked up there is over $300 to $320 million a year as of 7 years ago.
That's their net, I thought.
That's their gross profit. Oh, their gross receipts are over $500 million. And one of the county legislators running for office, Neil Pritchard, told me last week he worked with Ray Halbert, his son. And he said, what are they making here? And this is about the same amount of time, 7, 8, 9 years ago, and they were making about $1.3 million a day up there in gross receipts, and he says it's more today. So the idea is what we have is so many politicians that aren't standing up for the rule of law. As we said with Joe Griffo, he saw the light. He said the law is a law. There's nothing to negotiate. We should collect the tax. And today, he's embraced this agreement and didn't say boo to the contrary. So the people are not getting protected, and we're going to turn into a banana republic if we don't watch out.
I heard that there'll be no limit on how much land goes into trust because the Department of the Interior said they were not a party to the negotiations, so that there won't be limitation.
It's going to be hard to see where this actually goes because it is conditioned on the federal court has to sign off on this, and there still are cases. Even if the state pulls out of the federal land in a trust case, the interesting dynamic is the parties opposing the land into trust include the towns of Vernon and Verona, who are really getting the worst of the shaft in this whole thing, along with the rest of the taxpayers in Oneida County. Melvin Phillips, who I represent, he's protesting it, obviously, and obviously he's against the Oneida deal because it takes his land away from him. And we also have
the
Central
Cougars.
New York Fair Business, and we have
the Cougars.
The Cougars and Sarah is still involved, right? So we still have, which is Citizens Equal Rights Alliance. So you still have a number of groups who are still involved in this federal case. So the case is still ongoing, and while the case is ongoing, the deal is not going to be approved, which I find interesting that the county executive, you know, said, oh, we're going to get $12 million a year, and then the next day was on the TV saying, well, we're never going to get that much, and then, interestingly, didn't even put the money in the budget. And so I find it, just out of curiosity, somebody did say this to me in Albany, and it's, I don't know how true it is, it's just a speculation on a part of a journalist who has paid attention to this issue for a long time, said, do you think this is all just a big stalling tactic so they can just continue to do what they're doing, put it on hold, and they'll just keep collecting, not paying taxes, and blame people like you and Chad and everybody else because you're, you know, stopping the us from collecting the $12 million a year. And I thought that that was an interesting observation coming from someone who's been around for a while because they know they can't do this. They know it's not legal, really. But they're going to continue to feed the beast, which is whoever gets all this money out of Oneida Indian Nation, which, by the way, is not looks like it's not the rank and file so-called Oneida Indian Nation members. You know, we've already called into question whether Halbert or himself is even Oneida at all. And so who is he put in there politically to decide where the money goes? I mean, where Chad's talking about $200 or $300 million in net profits or to that tune, you've got the Seminoles in Florida who give something like $100,000 to each of their members, and they have a fraction of the profits that Oneida Indian Nation has. So, you know, we're hearing it's anywhere from $4,000 to $5,000 a quarter for the rank and file members who accept the money.
It's not
very much money when you think. Consider Ray Halberter has a $30 million jet parked in Hancock Field, and the money. Where is the money going? And by the way, the other thing that Chad and I haven't mentioned is our state and federal government is contributing between $8 and $9 million a year directly to Ray Halberter for so-called health care costs, or we don't know what they do with it.
HUD money, BIA money, health care money. But someone who, interestingly, used to work at the Oneida Healthcare facility questioned why the $1 million hadn't arrived. This is a number of years ago now, but I heard from someone who used to work up there, and they were fired when they questioned where this money is. So basically it's tribalism whereby a dictator decides where the money goes. So the feds, Washington may have an idea that this money should go to the healthcare facility, but ultimately Mr. Halberter has control, and the decisions are made accordingly.
Yeah, an interesting, ironic thing about that, where the money goes, is that, you know, he's the gatekeeper. So if you're a person of Oneida descent and say you want to go to college and you are entitled to a stipend because of your Indian status, really, you have to question that too. Yeah. But my client's grandson went to Cornell University and paid his own way because they're considered dissidents, so the dissidents don't get anything. So, it's out of control, really. Where are we? We're propping up, as Chad said, this kind of false government. For what? Who's benefiting? And why aren't the people of Oneida County benefiting?
And you know what was shameful about this vote by the county ledge on that day in May 28th? We had sections of this agreement where it said under review. We did not have, we had full sections and exhibits that we were not privy to. We voted on an incomplete document. And under the law, an agreement to agree is no agreement at all. But the other thing I would say, in terms of the map, the small inlay map here shows much more land that they're showing on this map here.
That's Exhibit I, correct?
Exhibit I. And the significant thing about Exhibit I is, if you look at the big map, it doesn't look like they're taking any part of Kirkland. But if you look at the small inlay map, that dovetails with much larger desire for land, because under the definitions, it looks like they want to go after the 300,000 acre original, the reservation of years ago. So that...
And that reservation, that land claim for 300,000 acres has to do with the Treaty of Canandaigua?
It has a part to do with that. The Treaty of Canandaigua, though, allowed... They had that kind of land back then, but the United States government in the Treaty of Canandaigua said that the Oneidas had the right to sell their land, and the American people had the right to purchase, and that actually happened. And so they gave up their sovereign Indian country, their aboriginal Indian title, to the state of New York in 1788. Then they got back from that treaty their use right, their reservation, whatever you want to call it, and they were allowed, if and when they wanted to sell their land to the American people, they could do that too and make money a second time, and they did that. And then development took place. And now it looks like, and they were paid multiple times for that land, in fact, the record shows. But going back to this land grab, it looks like if they come down to the treaty line from Fort Stanwix to the treaty line at the base of College Hill, it looks like all of Hamilton College will be swallowed up by this new deal that the Oneidas want to have happen. And so this is how they've operated. When they first opened up in 1993, Assemblyman Dave Townsend was there for the ribbon cutting, thinking that, well, we're going to gain the restaurant business, the hotel business. We're going to have an incredible economic benefit. It'll be a symbiotic relationship. We'll have mutual beneficial consequences from this development. And what happened later, as years developed, is that Oneidas captured all this business.
You say Oneidas. Keep saying it. It's the Halberter Casino Oneidas.
The Casino Oneidas. The other thing that happened, and it's very significant, is during the foreclosure case that the United County and Madison County have had, and by the way, this agreement wipes out these lawsuits that we've won, Ray Halberter had his attorney, Seth Waxman, in Washington, D.C., a really high-powered lawyer in Washington, and he wrote the U.S. Supreme Court, and Ray Halberter filed with Seth Waxman, filed with the U.S. Supreme Court, and I have it right here, a Declaration of Sovereign Immunity. And if you look at that, if you look at the little paragraph at the end, it says, "The nation hereby waives irrevocably and perpetually its sovereign immunity." They filed this in U.S. Supreme Court. Now, our county legislators allowed him to pull back and renege on this perpetual waiver of sovereign immunity. What this did was it allowed the counties of Madison and Oneida County to foreclose on, that was a hang-up, and they waived it. And then what Ray Haber wanted to do is kick the can down the road, because this was ready to be orally argued, the foreclosure case, before the U.S. Supreme Court in February of 2011. So they filed this paperwork in November 2010, and the Supreme Court acquiesced and sent the case back down to the Second Circuit. And since then, they've had this entire thing unravel, all in favor of the Oneidas, of the casino Oneidas, to the detriment of the taxpayers who were winning. And the county legislature, shame on them, they allowed Mr. Haber to pull back this waiver of sovereign immunity. And it's very unfortunate that all of the, this is going to allow for unprecedented tax-free land.
Can you again explain in a little more detail what was Mr. Halberter's motivation to sign this waiver of sovereign immunity?
I think
they were trying to prevent the case from going to court. It was just another, it was another stalling tactic.
Yep. Stall tactic.
So then they were on the eve of going to court for the argument, which should have been too late. You had to figure out a way to change the circumstances, and I think they threw that out there as a last-minute attempt to stop it from going forward, because they know they're going to lose. This all isn't by accident. This is all, they know they're, it's all, the house of cards is folding in, and Cuomo came in to save the day.
Just like this
for
agreement.
For himself, by the way.
Well, even this agreement today, I would argue, is unconstitutional. But what it does is it buys him, it kicks the can down the road. I can't believe Judge Kahn's going to sign this agreement. He's obligated to sign it, as does the Department of Interior.
He's not obligated. He's obligated to review it.
But let's suppose he does sign it. It's going to be appealed to the Second Circuit. And let's suppose whoever wins, whether it be the Ray Haber side of things or the taxpayers of Oneida County, whatever side wins at the Second Circuit, the other side is going to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. So this agreement, at a minimum, buys the casino Oneidas and maybe another 3 to 5 years. And if their gross profits are $300 million a year, $320 million a year, times 5 years, that's $1.5 billion in profit. This is unreal that our government officials would want to participate in something like this, not table the legislation, analyze it for what it's worth, and the detriment is through the roof.
Why is the law written in such a way that they can't just stop everything that's happening at the casino until this is settled?
They can. They can stop. No, but they won't.
Who is the enforcement on that?
Right. Not one attorney general or governor has closed this, even after the courts have determined, by the way, that the casino is illegal. I've heard it said from people that if they said, we're going to close you down if you don't pay taxes, that the casino would be closed down a grand total of 20 minutes, and they would pay. That's how. But now with this deal, the deal of the century, this is Chad calls it their 100-year wish list. This is a dream come true for anyone in a deal. And by the way, I don't think organized crime could come up with a better scheme than this, honestly. But why are we not enforcing this? No one has ever enforced it. We had Spitzer, he was a former attorney general, Andrew Cuomo, a former attorney general. Now we know why Andrew Cuomo as attorney general would never enforce this, because you've got to wonder why. Why not? People say, well, he must be getting money. Well, if he's getting money, I don't know if it's going through his campaign account, but there's somebody, a lot of people speculate that there's other ways that he's getting the cash or he's getting a benefit, because this just doesn't make any sense. Why would you do this? He's a lawyer. He knows. He should know, or should be easy to explain this to him, why this is so corrupt or illegal. But all they have to do is enforce it. It's not that the law is not on the books. It's a matter of enforcement. That's all it is.
And so then it is ultimately up to the governor or the
attorney general. Mm-hmm.
Pete, let me give you two more. We talked about no NEPA, no...
Even the local DA. Our local DA could enforce the land agreement, and he doesn't do anything. Of course, the sheriff and the DA, they're all best friends with the Tony Pacenti and the gang. Mm-hmm. They think we're crazy.
Well, we talked about the water rights in Rome that might be abridged, the hydrofracking problem. We talked about no seeker or NEPA. Now let me talk about the fact that land title insurance companies have insured these real property titles. The people that have purchased title policies did so, and the title insurance companies insured it since 2011, especially without the Indian land claim exception in the title policy, because the land claim was dead. And so what you have now is Oneida County government, Madison County government, and the state of New York unilaterally opened up the land claim. I see a day
with
where,
a literal gun to their head.
Yeah, and I see where the
or
title
I say
companies
symbolic gun to their head.
The title companies could go after there's something called subrogation, and the proximate cause of any title claim where their title might be unmarketable. And obviously, if they hydrofract the land, or if they buy 8,000 acres in a cluster and make the land value, no one else is going to want to buy in that vicinity, the marketability of that title goes down. So you could have a tremendous loss to title companies here. And I think that, and I tried to tell our county board about this, and I saw the chairman of the board, Jerry Fiorini, lean over to Greg Amorosa and whisper something. And all I can imagine is the governor said, get it done, I'll clean up the collateral mess. So that's another issue that has been missing the focus, and there's no sunshine on that. There's another one that Claudia writes about in her letter to her fellow colleagues, and that the rights of way, the easements that go through this area from Niagara Falls, et cetera, all the easements are unprotected. National Grid did not want to see this go through because they don't have their easements and rights of way protected. So the list goes on and on and on about how over the top this was once you start creating a state within a state.
And that's the Department of Interior said that they wanted to frack 600 million acres of Indian land in the U.S.
Yeah, let me mention that. The loopholes there are wide open. The standard is much more lax than what the DEC regulatory framework will be. Ray Halber purchased Ardent Resources, supposedly, and I heard it from someone who lives out in Knoxboro. They asked a full-blooded Oneida Indian 2 years ago, why did Ray Halber sell his cattle? And the reason given was because Ray Halber wants to do shale gas extraction. So it seems that this has been on the radar for a while. I asked George Joseph, the county legislator, I said, George, how come you were fighting us tooth and nail on this? We don't want to frack on county-owned lands. I said, you're a farmer. I said, you want to frack, do you? He said to me, not on my lands. But interestingly, George was right in the middle. He knew what was going on when this came down. He knew ahead of time what was happening here. And it's very sad.
I could see it happening and the governor just throwing up his arms and saying, it's federal land. But
he gets the benefits of what, state jobs? Because it's supposedly within New York.
Are we a state anymore with that? That land's going to be federal territory. Illegally, by the way, totally again. It's an impossibility. It'd be interesting to see, as I say, how we ever.
The analogy there is for federal territories, Guantanamo Bay, and you lose your federal your constitutional protections. And this agreement also deputizes deputies of Oneida County Sheriff will deputize Oneida Nation Police, and so you could be driving from point A to point B, and be out there in Indian Country, and they can arrest you. They could frame you. Do things and you'd be
they
potentially...
They could frame you now, but now it's going to be someone that Halberter hired that's going to go after you. Like, I'm worried about me, I'm worried about my client, I'm worried about... But, these people are going to have, equal powers to any other sheriff that's in the county, which is absurd.
They did this for...
What laws do they follow?
The Oneida Nation laws.
So they have their own laws, but they're enforcing them with the same force as the
They're going to have the same deputization, meaning they can go arrest anybody. They have Oneida County deputy sheriff has the jurisdiction of the county. They're going to give them countywide jurisdiction.
Mr. Halber.
As far as I know, I haven't seen the agreement. Have you? They signed all these. They signed off on this. The county legislatures, under duress. Without even having any of the many of the documents weren't even done. We didn't even know that some of the, like the Marble Hill land, it was mentioned, but the actual map itself was not provided until after,
I'll give you another crazy.
So they voted out without knowing what was in it. Big surprise.
Here's another crazy angle in this agreement. In horse racing, everything is set, and you have to adhere to the wagering board's rules in terms of payouts. Mr. Hauberger can pay out anything he wants to. He could walk in and say, only pay out 2% tonight or whatever it might be. And they have computers that do that. So think about it. This agreement allows Mr. Hauberger to, once a year, we're going to have an auditor to go in and monitor the payouts. Well, guess what? Guess who's cutting the check to see that the auditors get paid? Mr. Hauberger. That's the way this agreement reads. So it seems to me that there's no sunshine. It continues that way.
I get what you're going. What you're talking about is that in the deal, the Oneidas are going to pay, the casino Oneidas are going to pay a percentage off of certain machines.
Six and a quarter percent for Oneida
only
County.
The gaming machines. Now,
so the craps and so all the other
none
roulette,
of that, just
none
the
of
gaming
that
machines. So if the gaming machines are all, say, at the Turning Stone, where
proper.
They exist today,
yeah,
Turning
Stone
if they
proper.
Were to get landed in trust, just this is a presuppose, and then they can go off, and now they're going to have Savons in Sylvan Beach and Canastota.
Exit 33.
Can they put the gaming machines in all these places, which are now federal territory? We can't stop them. And start gaming in all those places, and those machines now generating income. Say there's 5,000 at Turning Stone or 3,000, I don't know how many. Now they're going to start migrating into other areas.
And they could completely eliminate them.
They could almost eliminate them, and we get nothing out of the pot. Now that's something that people have raised as well.
Well, here's the fact.
So the question is, though, why did the county executive put zero in his budget next year if this is such a great... Why did he put nothing in, and why have the Senecas already made an $80 million payment on their to make good on their deal that they have?
I want to back up on the machines,
though. Where's some good faith payment or down payment or guarantee or anything on this deal that you would do in any business deal if you were going to buy a company or get involved? You would do something. And we have the cards. They don't. So why would we just fold and let them control everything? Why? I mean, it begs the question, why?
If we have gaming expand throughout the state, in addition to what might happen here in South New York with the casino Oneidas, you're going to have less people traveling from Rochester and Albany to Turning Stone. And so in addition to their rights under the agreement, which they have every right to do because this agreement does not preclude it from happening, they can move their machines, as Claudia said, to Exit 33 and the Savons, deplete the amount of gaming on the machines happens at Turning Stone proper. But in addition, you'll have volume loss by way of gaming venues throughout the balance of the state of New York. The fear is that Mr. Halber will want to continue his tremendous profits, and he'll morph into retail establishments, which this agreement also allows him to do. And you cannot control loss leader pricing. The agreement says he can charge tax, but he gets to keep the tax. And it's impossible to police loss leader pricing. So let's take the tractor business, for example. There's Caldonas in Clinton. You have a tractor business down in Sangerfield. You have another one out in Herkimer County, and there's one out in North Utica. They're basically saturated right now. And he could do loss leader pricing on tractors and invite people into a mega Indian mall that could be bigger than the Mall of America. And sadly, that puts everything at risk in terms of our economy, because $90 million a year in our county coffers comes in from sales tax. And as soon as you take even $5-6 million out of the coffers for that, we're in rough shape as a county.
Yeah, I think that one, I mean, Chad's mall analogy is very realistic, but I think they really like to capitalize on big cash businesses, gambling, cigarettes, gasoline sales, and that where there's huge taxes to the average American and none to them. So you're going to, you know, the fact that we're paying, what, almost a dollar a gallon on gas in New York State, and they have that huge, that gives them a huge benefit. Cigarettes is an enormous tax, and this deal allows them to now sell cigarettes of any brand, and they have to collect the tax themselves and then remit and keep it for themselves for their own government purposes, which is absurd, because I really think that they can't come up with 450 or 500 living people with any kind of Oneida descent, whether they're matrilineal or not. they're going to really have a, I don't, they're nowhere near 1,100 as he continues to claim and has claimed for 20 years. You know, actuarial tables will tell you that you're 1,100, he started out with 1,100. He certainly doesn't have 1,100 today. I don't think he ever had 1,100 to begin with, because I have rolls back from the 80s that aren't even near 1,000. So I know he's including my client's family members on his rolls, even though they're technically not his, not in the what his so-called group, and they're also technically not of matrilineal descent, his children. So, you know, this is all another big farce. I mean, where are we? And who is he going to sell the cigarettes to? He could sell them on the internet. There's no accountability for that. There's no mechanism for collecting if he fails to collect the tax and distribute it to the people that are the other Oneida people that should be gaining or benefiting from this. I mean, the whole thing is just, to me, it's all fiction when you read the document. I mean, who are all these people, and where are their names and addresses, and how come we, the people of the rest of the United States and the rest of the area, don't know who these people are who are getting special treatment?
One question that we haven't touched on yet is, what does this mean for the people living in the areas that are being claimed through this land claim? Do they stay there? Do they get kicked off? Do they get compensated?
It doesn't appear to be. I mean, they're not. Most of the land that they're including in the land and address is land they own.
Well, that's the 17,000.
Except my client's land.
Okay.
They're actually trying to kick him off the land where he's resided, and his family and ancestors who've been part of all the treaties have signed all the way back.
The true Oneidas, and by the way,
the true Oneidas.
Mr. Halbert stole his treaty cloth a number of years ago, and that was a symbolic relationship with New York State, and they had some incidental money come, I guess, their way each year off of that.
Well, it's interesting that this whole controversy came up because when Mr. Halberter was confronted on by the Daily Caller story, which we had, I've been sending this to everybody, just hoping more and more people pick it up. Is he really an Oneida Indian? Is he really an Oneida member of Six Nations? Can he prove with documents to refute the National Archive documents that I have? You know, matrilineal descent, if he's not from the Six Nations, and I traced the grandmothers down, and he's not a Six Nations derivative, then what is he? Mm-hmm. Maybe he can prove that he's an Oneida at some point. But the question is, why is he reaping the benefits and getting, you know, some kind of, and I hate to, I use the word a racist classification, but it's purely based on him claiming that he's an Oneida Indian. So he gets to be tax-free, he gets to run a casino, do cigarette sales, get involved in this operation, and what about the rest of us? And I think that kind of calls it into question. But the only response that he's had so far, and his spokespeople have said, is that I'm a white racist. But yet his spokesman is paid for by him, and we're calling into question his legitimacy. But I actually am a pro bono attorney for the genuine Oneida Indian, who we can trace his lineage back to, like, whenever the first records were done in the 1700s. So, I mean, I don't want to get, I mean, maybe our documents aren't accurate, maybe he's got something more, but he's never once said, oh, I'm legitimate. He's just said, I was appointed by, the courts have recognized that I'm a legitimate member. But the courts didn't have these documents either. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know, like, I get accused of being something, it's the race card gets pulled on me, but yeah, at my own expense, I help this guy because I believe in him, and he's a great person, and he lives very poorly and very modestly.
Well, it seems that you calling that into question calls for a response of legitimacy.
Yeah, and maybe they can say, well, the federal court, it's okay that you know, Sherry Bollard and Bill Clinton put me in place. Maybe that's okay, but it doesn't mean that you're still an Oneida Indian, and so why do you get these rights and my guy doesn't? And why won't you recognize my client, who's the real deal, you know, the Bureau of Indian Affairs?
Pete, you know, a while back, Claudia talked about how I referred to this agreement as a 100-year wish list for the United Indian Nation.
Yeah.
I thought it was significant when the Madison County supervisor stood up at the press conference to say that we have to thank Peter Carman for his amazing, amazing work on this deal. And when I read the agreement, I got a headache because it's all one-sided. And it is.
And Peter Carman, again, is the attorney for
the United Indian Nation.
Yeah.
Correct. And even our county executive and the governor said that this gets rid of all the lawsuits as if it's going to be the long-standing disputes. You know, and they didn't have the vision that the Cayugas were going to come in when they made Cayuga County an exclusive for the Oneidas. They didn't have the vision that Vernon and Verona were going to stand up for their rights and file a lawsuit. They didn't have the vision that in this agreement, the state of New York has to pull their lawsuits. Well, guess what? As Claudia pointed out, the Citizens Equal Rights Alliance lawsuit, the group SARA, led by Judy Bachman, who's the national chair, they had the lead case, according to the federal courts, on these issues. And their case cannot be pulled, and they're not going to be forced to pull the case. And yet I think the state of New York and their legal counsel, in their infinite wisdom, thought that they could pull this one over on us all.
They thought they'd bully people into compliance.
Yeah, yeah. And their attorney for state operations was in that conference we had, and you know, it was a very sad showing of truth and justice and the American way in there. This was all about making something happen, and the heck with rights that protect the people the way our U.S. Constitution and our state constitution do. Tax laws were broken every which way. It's just amazing to me that they had the gall and the audacity to try to pull this off. And in my opinion, the Department of Interior will be hard-pressed to sign this thing. Judge Kahn gave the Department of Interior what amounts to an ultimatum. He said, don't come back here. This feat of trust law case is done. And unless you come back with sufficient proof to establish that the United Nations has standing to put land in a trust, don't bother coming back. And we know from a fact that the Narragansett Indian case before the U.S. Supreme Court had a qualifier for that feat of trust, and that was they had to be a federally recognized tribe as of 1934. We know from the National Archives the United Nations didn't qualify. So again, they have the evidence. Mr. Halbert is not stupid. This was a hijacking. This was an attempt to kick the can down the road. This was an attempt to avoid the law. This was an attempt by our politicians to totally disregard the rule of law. And the people that are paying for this are the taxpayers. And you have people like Melvin Phillips and his families that have to be stressed out about what their future is and holds. And it's this is all in America. I mean, I can understand if this was an island republic. But this is America. And it's very sad what's going on. If people don't wake up, and I think they're starting to. But the money is out of control and is not being used for the greater good.
Well, you mentioned before about the different people who are involved in the new lawsuits, Vernon and Verona, Melvin's case, Cayugas. What about the city of Sherrill? Are they still involved with the lawsuit?
No, actually, Chad knows more about that. As far as I know, they aren't, based on a vote that they just recently took.
This past week, the city of Sherrill voted to not join Vernon and Verona in a lawsuit, basically.
How can they do that, though?
Voted that because our county executive has made a decision to buy them out, to make them whole. And I'm not sure that would pass the county board. But I can understand. The vote was 4-1. Mike Hennessy was the only one who voted the other way. So they decided to try to make an agreement with Oneida County. And I haven't seen any agreement yet, but that's basically what's going on. Everything was in closed session until the vote happened, and that was in a public venue, and I was there in attendance. So the vote was 4-1 to try to cut a deal with Oneida County, whereby the county executive was going to try to make the city of Sherrill whole from any collateral damage from this agreement. And so what we have is our county executive wanted to divide and conquer, make this agreement go through, and wherever someone, you know, raises their hand, help me out, they're going to do that. And the city of Sherrill city council members said, well, I have to do what's right for the best people of the city of Sherrill. So they're looking at their situation locally, which avoids the bigger question of constitutional protections for the rest of us. So they're willing to capitulate, let this agreement go through, because the county executive is going to make us whole. And I'm not even sure if an agreement like that will pass the county board, but this is just another piece of the jigsaw puzzle that creates a pile of you-know-what on top of you-know-what.
I want to make one last point that I thought is important, and it has to deal with the governor's, not just the upstate gaming agreement, which is where the Oneida deal is, and the legislature. And they made an amendment to the agreement, and one of the amendments was to remove any prohibition from political fundraise or for political donations. And originally that was part of the document where there was going to be a restriction on making political donations out of from the Oneidas or the casino Oneidas or these groups on this deal. And that was taken out, interestingly enough.
Last
so now,
minute.
Last minute it was taken out. And I just point you to a couple, you know, years ago when Dave Townsend was running for sheriff, he was always a long-standing, by the way, beloved by the or genuine Oneidas, despised by Ray Halperter and the I call the casino Oneidas, because he's always stood up and said they need to pay their taxes. He was, you know, his family works there. He was never against the casino. He just said, just pay your fair share. So they spent more than $500,000 against Dave Townsend running for sheriff back in 2010 in support of Rob Machel. They described him as our hometown hero. They did, 20 or 30 beautiful, glossy flyers supporting Machel and against Dave Townsend and saying that he was basically a bully and a bigot. And interestingly, they did that. They tried to do that again in a couple of other races up in the city of Oneida. And then, you know, eventually when people figure out they're in the middle of it, they were out. But it's people should be aware of the amount of money they have to pour into races, which we suspect they're doing now in county legislative races. And the other interesting thing is I used to represent 18 towns in Oneida County, including Verona. I now have 2 towns in Oneida County, and my district stretches 7 counties all the way to Orange County. Unprecedented. I mean, there's never been a district created like this in the history of New York. And I used to represent the casino that this was, and I was told by very reliable sources who are part of the redistricting committee, and not just political people, but people who actually have worked on this for 20 or 30 years, who said, it's the people in Oneida County, including the Oneida Nation, who wanted you out of Oneida County because of this issue. So, I mean, they have more power than people think to manipulate even our redistricting. So, I mean, obviously, I can't prove that they were actually made the decision because everybody eventually voted on it. And the governor, who said 10 times in a public forum, I will not support any redistricting plan that looks like there's been any gerrymandering. And he signed it in the dark of night, by the way, because a week later, people kept coming up to me. Is there any way we can change this? I said, the governor voted on it a week ago, but there was no press release. By the way, I supported this gerrymandering plan, not just my district. There were many others, but mine is the worst case scenario as far as that goes. But people should be aware of how they interfere with politics in sort of an insidious way, mm-hmm. You know, either money or manipulation of districts and a manipulation of our rights. So
I should know this, but I don't remember. What is the number of your district?
101, District 101.
If the listeners have a chance, go and take a look at District 101. I mean, that's very peculiar.
Yeah, it's about one town wide through seven, snaking through 7 counties. Wonderful people in the district, but it's 200 miles, but almost, from one end to the other if you try to stay in the district.
And another question I have for you is, it just seems like it's such bad press for Ray Halperter to be kicking out Melvin Phillips. What do you think the motivation is there?
Well, because I think the reason he wants, well, we can't get any press. The local media won't cover the story. The only local media that's covered the story has been WTR. Rachel Polansky covered a quick, maybe a 1-minute story in the news. WKTV will not cover it. The Utica OD had asked. They have no interest anymore. And I've been trying to get national attention through the New York Times, the New York Post, even the Daily Caller, the Washington Times, anyone, you know, on a national level that will look at it. I think it would look very badly. I mean, this isn't the first people he's tried to move off land. He threw the Shenandoahs off the 32 acres years ago, and that's all been documented, and it's, you know, horrific watching them come and, you know, crowbar open their trailer and force these people out of the land. And, you know, it's. I think the reason they want his land is because it is the genuine land that's completely treaty compliant left in Oneida County. And they want to loop that in to legitimize themselves. That's the only reason I can come up with why would they ever. And they want to silence Melvin Phillips because they can't combat him.
And was Melvin a chief at some point? Or?
He's technically a chief, but because Halperter is the gatekeeper, we are having real problems with the Bureau of Indian Affairs getting him recognized and set up, although he's been recognized by the Six Nations and recognized by the condoled chiefs of the Longhouse. Now, you know that the Oneida Longhouse is no longer in operation. It's been padlocked for 20 years. I mean, Halperter doesn't even allow, they don't even meet, as it, you know, and you go down, when you go down to the Children's Museum and see the traditional longhouse of the great historic tribes, that just doesn't happen with the United Indian Nation. Cause
so their government has been usurped.
Their government is part of, is basically Ray Halperter's empire, I guess, is the best way to put it.
So does Ray consider himself a chief?
No, he's never says him, he's considered what they, when he was put in by Ada Deer for the 6 months conditionally, he was considered what they call a seat warmer, so he's a representative, he's not a chief.
And so Melvin was the last chief?
No, he wasn't a chief because technically Melvin is part of the Marble Hill Oneidas, which is a recognized, which is a separate band, has been recognized in history that way, but not modern history.
But Melvin can meet with the Haudenosaunee, the League of
he can appear, he's allowed to be in the, you have to be 100%, you have to be full-blooded Indian to meet in the League of the Iroquois, the Six Nations, and he does. He meets when they meet. And the Onondagas meet every week in their longhouse. So there are, you know, there are other, you know, groups that do meet. It's just the United Nation is really just the, it's Halberter, basically.
Who was the...
And I say United Nation because it's the United Indians or the traditional Indians.
So is there a current chief of the Oneidas that's not the Marble Hill?
No.
Okay.
Just Halberter. He's the nation's representative.
I see.
No chief.
Quite a lot of material, isn't it?
I know.
Yes.
Thank you very much. It's a tough topic. I appreciate it. It's hard.
By the way, I'd like to mention that on October 29th at the Clinton VFW, Claudia Tenney, myself, and Judy Bachman, who's the Citizens Equal Rights Alliance chairman nationwide, are going to put on a little symposium or forum on a lot of this subject matter. We're probably going to only speak for... 15 or 20 minutes, and then there'll be a question and answer. And so,
good luck explaining.
Yeah, good luck.
15 minutes.
I know. How long have we been here? About an hour and a half, I'd say.
I'd say, about an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. It's well, that's the problem with the media is not covering this. And to get started on a letter to the editor, you're only allowed 150 words. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Whenever I talk to people about it, they're always it's incredible because there's no, we don't have a continuous knowledge. The newspapers aren't, they're not investigative journalists. They just run press releases. So when the governor sweeps into town, they run a press release, which is his angle, not the objective angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I give, you know, the Post Standard years ago did cover it and did do quite a bit on this. But as far as the Utica OD, they basically, and KTV, I've never seen anything really significant on it.
One other
in
thing
years.
To mention is that on October 26th at ESF, there will be a speaking forum on Haudenosaunee perspectives on fracking from 1 to 5 p.m.
Oh, where's this?
The Environmental School of Forestry.
Where is it, though?
Paul Smith's?
No, it's its own... it's in Syracuse.
Oh, in Syracuse. Okay.
So,
what's the date and time again?
It's October 26th. It's a Saturday, 1 to 5 p.m. So I don't know which representatives will be there speaking,
okay.
But...
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, should be very interesting.
Wow, well, great interview, Pete. I appreciate your
thanks for all the time.
Yeah, thank you both for all your knowledge.
Thank you.
Take care.